Welcome back to MP Access. My name is Ekaterina, and today we are in New Orleans for Velocity, and joining me, Keith Stone. Keith, welcome back to the show. This is not your first time, right?
This isn't my first rodeo.
Yes, yes. So welcome back.
Thank you for
joining me today. So for those who don't know you, tell us a little bit about your background. I know you had quite a bit of a journey to get into the real estate, so let's chat a little about that.
It's been a bit of a trip. Technically, I'm a civil engineer by trade, so I have a civil engineering degree. I did 17 years of construction management, and while I was building large commercial facilities for corporations, I was using those same skill sets to work on residential properties for my own rental portfolio.
Mm.
I figured I got to have an exit plan eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's from there that started the transition from acquiring my own properties, building a portfolio, to not finding a realtor that worked the way that I wanted to work. So I got licensed myself and eventually transitioned into real estate full time.
Okay. So when did you decide that you are done with engineering and you want to move into real estate? When was that breaking point, if you will?
For me, it was twofold. I made a decent engineering salary, but I wasn't making as much as the company owners. And one of my mentors told me many years ago, your boss will never pay you enough to be their neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of sat with me. And the other thing was, you know, I had earned 3 weeks of vacation and I had to beg and plead to use my own vacation time. So one of the things that I love about real estate is that I own my own time.
Mm-hmm.
My
Very
laptop
flexible.
Is 5 feet from me. My Apple Watch is on my wrist and my cell phone is next to my laptop. That is my office.
Mm-hmm.
I can do 90% of my business wherever these three objects may be, wherever that is in the world.
See, I was going to ask you at first, why didn't you get a construction company?
I have one of those too.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But that's a smaller scale thing. And again, I like the flexibility and the freedom of time.
Mm-hmm.
If I built that construction company into a 50 employee enterprise, I'm going to spend my time and effort managing my 50 employees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I look at it like a cruise ship. It's great. It's got all the bells and whistles, but it takes a long time to stop and a long time to turn.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a small, nimble yacht, I can turn and pivot at the drop of a dime.
And how long have you been in the industry so far?
It's been 11 years now.
11 years.
Yes. 11 years as a full-time agent, but I've been investing for 22 years now.
Wow. So you Yes. invest mostly in what? Properties?
Yes.
Land?
Single family residential, a few small multifamily properties, and I do have some infill lots and some acreage.
Mm-hmm. And you are primarily based where?
In Dallas, Texas.
In Dallas.
Yes, yes, yes. Right where Five Star's home base is.
Yes.
So you'll see me every September at Five Star.
We're glad to see you there every September. Okay, so at what point did real estate first enter the picture for you?
One of my early mentors and one of the very first self-made millionaires I ever met, he made his millions through real estate. And he told me I didn't acquire my first property till I was 29. And at the time I was 22. And he said, hey, you can get started tomorrow. And so I said, teach me thy ways.
Mm-hmm.
And he essentially laid out the game plan and the blueprint for me. And I said, okay, I can follow that. And I've been on that path ever since.
Mm-hmm. So what is the recipe? How do you become rich? Tell me, Keith, because I don't know.
The recipe, in short, is to always buy the ugliest house on the block at the cheapest price possible.
See, I've heard about that. And I have flipped houses in the past, but we flipped houses in Missouri,
mm-hmm.
which is very easy state to find ugly houses in.
Yes.
In Texas, number one, weather is a big problem for us. Like, we buy terrible houses in terrible condition. There is no electricity, no nothing. And you're just there, you know, in humidity.
I love it.
Yeah.
Give me more.
I don't. I love the process, but the weather makes it a little bit more challenging. So we have stopped flipping houses in Texas. So what do you do? Like, where do you invest? Is it better to buy land?
So there are opportunity in the challenges. Just as you stated, I don't like this condition because of X, Y, and Z. Many other investors feel the same way. If you're not afraid to step into the mud, yes, your shoes are going to get dirty. But at the end of the day, I can buy some much nicer loafers when I'm done with the transaction.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always going to look for the distressed asset. whether it's leaning or falling apart, or maybe I had one I literally just knocked down last month. But it's fine because now I can build a new house on that lot.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always deals to be had. There are three things that are constant in life: death, taxes, and real estate.
That's right.
People always need a place to lay their head, and wealth will always transfer via real estate. Mm-hmm. So if you're brave or a little bit stupid,
mm-hmm.
or if you have a plan, you can absolutely take advantage of the market. There's always going to be dispositions.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be someone looking to buy or sell, and I'm just providing a service.
So can you tell me or share a success story of your life? Maybe how you bought a first property that you didn't really see big potential in, and then it took off.
I absolutely can. I used to live in Washington, D.C., and I knew I wanted to move to Dallas, Texas. At the time in my life, I was concerned that I would be able to carry two mortgages simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
I was much younger in my career. I wasn't married yet. And I said, let me find a property that will almost pay for itself. So I had very strong criteria for my realtor. I need to find a multifamily, one that I could live in one side and I could lease the other side out. This was house hacking before it was house hacking. And so my realtor, I looked on his website and I found a hideously ugly property. And I said, that's the one. It had forest green carpet like it was from a casino. It was purple.
Oh.
And I sent my realtor over there just to make sure it wasn't falling down. And I bought it sight unseen.
Mm-hmm.
I bought that property in 2009. Today is 2026. I have lived in that property. I have leased it out. I have turned it into a short-term rental. It has cash flowed for me every year.
Still to this day.
To this day, since 2009. I bought it sight unseen, and I literally touched every surface of that house. I fixed the foundation. I replaced the roof. I've upgraded everything. As a matter of fact, I've renovated it twice.
Wow.
But I've pulled equity out to purchase businesses. If you can buy it correctly at the right place and you have the right vision,
mm-hmm.
it will give you a return on your dividend.
Absolutely. How many properties do you own now?
I'm at about 35 doors, and I'm at about 7 or 8 lots.
You're a millionaire.
On paper.
Oh my God. Are you on Forbes?
not yet.
Is that your goal?
It is not. I'd rather be quiet wealthy.
That's the best kind.
Yes.
Yes. Are you mostly in Texas properties or nationwide?
Texas and Northern Louisiana. I've sold my portfolio in other states because it was a little harder to manage more than a car ride away. My preference is to be within, say, a 200-mile radius, because either I have a property manager, which we have one now, or I can hop in my car and be there the same afternoon, because you will come upon problems. It's just the nature of people and the nature of the business. If I can get to them quickly, I can usually manage and mitigate the problem.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever look into California?
I wouldn't, just because I'm not familiar with the market.
Mm-hmm. What states would you not purchase besides California a property in?
So it would have to be within, let's say, a 200-mile radius of Dallas. So that gives me Louisiana, Arkansas, and Oklahoma.
What about Washington, D.C.?
I formerly owned in Washington, D.C. when I lived there, but I've disposed of those properties.
Oh, okay. So you no longer have it.
I sold those. Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. And also, one thing that I like to keep in mind is the landlord-tenant laws in different states. Some states are more landlord-friendly than others. It doesn't mean you can't be successful and can't make money, but I prefer to hit the easy button instead of swimming upstream.
Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of people like you who have multiple properties, and then their financial goal is to own a hotel or an apartment complex. You know, what is your goal in there? Do you just want to have, you know, properties and passive income for the rest of your life, you know, to pass on to your future generation and kids, or what is your final destination here?
So we have transitioned into multifamily. I was part of a syndication deal where we purchased a 23 unit. We renovated it. We sold it. It's quite profitable. We do have a 7 unit that's now currently in our portfolio that we took down to the studs, renovated it, and we're planning on keeping that one for the time being. But eventually, I would like to get to a nice mixture of commercial, multifamily, and residential, because there's benefits to all of them, tax benefits and such. For instance, if you own a 100 unit or more multifamily building with the economies of scale, you can afford full-time maintenance and full-time management on site. Mm-hmm. So instead of me dealing with 100 tenants, I'm dealing with one property manager and one maintenance guy.
Mm-hmm.
However, the financing for those properties are usually going to have a 7 to 10 year balloon. So every decade, I'm going to either have to find new financing or bring on partners.
Mm-hmm.
Where with single family, it's easier to attain, easier to work on paying off the debt service in full. With commercial, you have the same problems as multifamily, but sometimes you have considerably longer leases.
Yes.
You could have a 5, 7, or 10 year lease with escalating rents each year. So a nice mixture of those to kind of offset the dangers and problems with the others.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one correct answer in real estate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's say somebody is a beginner who's listening to us right now. Mm-hmm. He got $30,000 in cash.
Yep.
What should he do with those money? Should he invest into an ugly property, just cash only? Let's say the property is foreclosure. It's $15,000. Mm-hmm. Leave $15,000 to renovate it, sell it, buy two. Or should he get a better property and mortgage and use $30,000 on a down payment?
Okay. Let's say this mythical person, is he or she already a homeowner?
No.
Okay. If I were this person and I was not a homeowner, I would use that $30,000 to acquire a 2, 3, or 4 unit building via an FHA loan. That would require me to put 3.5% down payment. You could also use an FHA 203K loan where they will help you to finance the renovations. So let's say that property needs a new roof because we buy ugly properties at the bottom of the market. Or maybe it still has the original 1960s kitchen with the pink tile backsplash.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of cute.
Yeah. So I would use that money to acquire a multifamily. I would absolutely live in one of the units so I don't run afoul of the FHA regulations. But that would give me 1, 2, or 3 tenants that would cash flow. Now, once the property is renovated and established, I could refinance out of that FHA loan. I could pull out equity if I needed to acquire the next property, or I could just have the cash flow as a nice supplemental benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And the property should appreciate over time.
How long is it going to take for that person to get tenants?
Not long at all. Okay, let's stick an asterisk on that. It's going to depend on your market. In my market, Dallas-Fort Worth, which is flourishing and businesses are moving, there are 1,200 people moving to the Metroplex every day. If you're in small town in, say, the Midwest, maybe you have stagnant population growth.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, that doesn't mean you won't be able to find a tenant. You'll just have to provide a place that's enticing enough that someone will say, this is an upgrade to my current living style.
Mm-hmm.
People are always looking to upgrade their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I'm talking to you right now, and you're a very motivational person. Like, I almost want to sell my car right now.
No, just, don't sell your car. Dallas is not a walkable city.
No, it's not.
You're still going to need a car.
Yes, absolutely. No, but like to me, it's still very motivational and I'm rethinking all of my life decisions right now. So what kind of skills should you have to build a business like yours, Keith?
So the construction management was just a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with my core business, believe it or not. I'm not swinging a hammer. I'm not using a paint roller. I'm not touching plumbing. What it comes down to is people skills and management. That's everything in life. If you can manage your time, if you can manage expectations, even as a project manager in construction, my job wasn't to build. My job was to manage expectations and to shed liability.
Mm.
We don't get sued. We don't get the owner sued. And I manage expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So in communication, if you can communicate with your vendors and your partners, I expect this from you at this budget and this time.
Mm-hmm. Communication and networking are
Right. Two
big things.
If we're all on the same page and if you can't do this job, that's fine. Send me someone who can do the job and I'll give you the next one that's closer to your skill level or closer to your scope.
How do you keep those connections in such a, you know, fast paced industry? How do you keep those people around you that you meet?
So it's constant networking. In my office, I'm known as the guy who knows a guy. You need a roofer, I got a guy. You need an electrician, I got a guy. You need a plumber, I got a guy. You need somebody to come up here and tarp a roof at 3 a.m. because the shingles are blown off, I've got a guy. He'll be out there at daylight. But in order to develop this Rolodex, I'm constantly meeting people. I'm constantly evaluating tenants. I'm speaking to other investors and other people in the know and saying, who did a great job for you? Who got you out of a bind?
Mm-hmm.
And I always pay my people on time.
Mm-hmm. You got connections.
Because I expect them to answer the phone when I call.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. You're a good person to know. So do you have a favorite property?
My new favorite property is probably our 7-unit multifamily. We bought it. It was a true ugly duckling. I mean, there was, you could stand on the first floor and you could see daylight out the ceiling. And it was a 2-story property.
Mm.
Holes in the bathtubs and toilets had caved in. There was a squatter. It had fleas. It had every piece of vermin you can think of. Mm. We had to literally walk through the property with Tyvek suits on. And we were spraying each other down to get fleas off each other. But we got it at such a good price because it was such an ugly duckling. And if you walk in that property now, it is literally the best looking property on the block. And the neighbors thank us for it.
Yeah.
And we have a waiting list for people who say, when the next tenant moves out, can I get in there? So we're very
proud. A bit of a makeover story here.
Incredible. If we showed you the photos, you'd be like, there's no way. There's no way.
So you usually hire people to do those makeovers, correct?
Absolutely.
You don't flip it yourself. Like,
no.
You don't do drywall yourself. Why not? Since you were in engineering and construction, why don't you do it yourself to, like, save some money?
When I got started, that was the thing. But as I've progressed, I've realized that time is much more expensive than anything else. The same reason I pay somebody to mow my lawn. The same reason I pay someone to clean my house. The same reason I'm going to find a laundry service when I get home. My time is much better spent finding the next deal or solving an issue instead of doing the physical labor. Now, in an emergency, I've got a heck of a tool set and I can go fix something in a pinch.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm the guy that's got a guy.
Yes.
I can call someone and they'll probably do it faster and better than I can do it. And for me, that's worth the money so I can save my time.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a scary tenant story.
I've had squatters. I've had house fires, like plural. I've had the sheriff kick in the door to serve a warrant on someone. When you're dealing with tenants, you're dealing with people.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has a bad day. So there's no particular story that's worse than the other. The squatter is no worse than the person that didn't pay their rent. The house fires are no worse than the person who...
As a serial killer.
We might give the house fire a pass compared to the serial killer. But they're just people. Just as if you and I have bad days or we have traumatic experiences, mm-hmm. they do as well. Theirs are just amplified. Mm-hmm. So if we learn how to pivot, and we learn how to treat people like people, we can usually get past those.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no one particular story. It's about how we react to those people in their crisis.
How do you react and how do you keep yourself calm knowing that this is your baby, this is your property, you have invested so much time, money, and energy into making it so pretty, and yet somebody comes in your life, in your house, and ruins it? Like you said, house fire. Let's say somebody was making a dinner and, you know, was totally irresponsible. They forgot to turn off their stove and mm-hmm. they set your house on fire, and now you have so much problems, and the person obviously, you know, is too.
So you have to think of it as a business instead of a personal asset. We're here in a wonderful Marriott property. God forbid this hotel ever catches on fire. The Marriott family is not going to shed a tear over it. They have insurance. These things happen. The most important thing is the person's okay from the house fire. No one perished. So that's what's most important. Yes, it's important to me, but it's just an object. I can rebuild it. I can replace it. The people are priceless. And the people are my customers. If I don't have them, I couldn't cover my mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
So I take a different tact with them than I do other aspects of my life. Because, again, they could be having a bad day. You know, maybe a couple got into an argument or someone got laid off or someone's child is under the weather. That could cause undue stress. I can fix drywall. Drywall is cheap. I can't fix people.
But is there something that keeps you up at night when you rent out a property? Well, maybe not at this point since you have so many of them, but maybe in the beginning you were thinking, God, I hope this person is not going to, you know, abandon the property, or I hope this person is not going to betray me and not pay the rent next month, like anything that used to stress you out that no longer is.
Initially, before I had systems in place, there was a lot more stress and a lot more concerns. But now that I have systems in place, I screen my tenants well. My leases are pretty ironclad, and I provide expectations to people. If you pay your rent on time, you're going to get A, B, and C, and I expect X, Y, and Z from you. Initially, when I was chasing dollars instead of utilizing the system, it's going to come with undue stress.
Mm-hmm.
When you put your systems in place, tenant screenings, your tenant walkthrough, your ironclad leases with what is and isn't acceptable, you can mitigate a lot of those issues before they even rear their ugly heads.
Mm-hmm. So going back to networking a little bit, I want to know your, let's say, recipe of getting to know people mm-hmm. and sticking to those people. Like you said, you're the guy who knows a guy.
Yes.
So how do you keep those connections? Like, do you go out on, like, to get a drink with them every Thursday? Like, do you send them emails? Do you send them Christmas cards? Like, what is the recipe? How to keep in touch with so many people at the same time?
Well, the first thing is I make myself memorable. And I like to approach people with a different tactic. Most people say, how can I get in business with you? How can I get some assets? How can I get some listings? My questions usually are along the lines of, what are your pain points and how can I help?
Mm-hmm.
What are you missing that I could help fill in the blanks? Because if people say, I like that guy, he's making my business and my life easier, they're more liable to reach out to me and I'm more liable to stay top of mind for them. And then it's okay to reach out and touch people. Like, for instance, this past Mother's Day, I sent out 28 Mother's Day cards. I only have one mother and mm-hmm. one wife, but I have other women that are very important to me in my life. So I'm going to send them Mother's Day cards. I'm going to send them holiday cards. I'm constantly scanning real estate related news articles.
Mm.
And if there's something that I find pertains to them, I'll just shoot them a quick text. Hey, I found this, thought this might be interesting to you. Let me know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes staying top of mind is good enough, especially if that's the person that you think always looks out for your best interest.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of important people, do you remember a person who just impacted your life and your career so much that to this day you're thankful for?
Well, if we're talking about the REO space, there's mm-hmm. actually two gentlemen in this room with me right now.
You want to give a shout out?
Shout out to Sam Hantosh with Remax out of Michigan and Todd Yovino out of Island Properties out of Long Island, New York. These two gentlemen didn't know me from a hole in the wall. And there was a conference many, many moons ago. And they said, hey, we're about to go smoke a cigar. You want to come hang out with us? And half a decade later, we still plan our cigar dates. They still refer business. They've still been great assets. And sometimes it's being in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have anything to offer these two gentlemen, but they have poured into me. They've made connections. And so when I see them, you know, we're not shaking hands. We're giving each other hugs at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's worth the time, energy, effort, and expense to attend a conference, not necessarily to gain the business, but to network, to gain the friendships, and the most importantly, the partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were to ever think of REO in the state of Michigan, I would think of Sam Hantosh first. If I was thinking anything in Long Island, Staten Island, I would think of Todd Yovino first.
How would people describe your reputation in the REO world?
Ooh, I would hope they would describe me as a true professional and a guy that can pivot and find answers to problems.
Mm-hmm.
Things are going to come up, you know. This property isn't what we thought it was. Or there's a tree growing in the living room. These photos are 10 years old, and there's a car-sized hole in the roof. I can figure that out. It might cost a little time. It might cost a little money. But we can get it figured out.
How important is personal reputation in REO world?
It's extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, there are some people who have name recognition and name value. Some of these people have been in the industry for 2 and 3 decades. So if you mention the name, the people in the know are going to say, I know them. They used to work for this company, and now they work for that company. And we did business together during the 08 and 09. So your reputation is everything in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
Professionalism, courtesy, and honesty take you a long way.
Mm-hmm. This is a very fast-paced industry as well, like we mentioned earlier. What are some trends you are looking after right now?
So every single day, like clockwork, I check interest rates. Because mm-hmm. that affects affordability.
You're like a broker.
Absolutely. Every day, I'm seeing who's pulling the marionette yes. strings and making the puppet dance.
Yes.
So interest rates, I need to know about affordability. It doesn't matter how many listings I have if no one can afford them. Also, I'm going to look at the trends with politics. Is someone suggesting a piece of legislation that's going to affect my business, whether it's a foreclosure moratorium or something to help first-time home buyers? So I'm constantly glued to the news sources to see how it's going to affect my business. I need to be ahead of the trend.
Mm-hmm. How do you stay ahead of the trend? Just a lot of research on a daily basis? Like, when do you rest?
time management is key, but this is an information-based business.
Mm-hmm.
If you're still thinking this is the same business from 2014, you're 12 years behind.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to know what's going to happen, what's going to change. Some of it's on the local level. Is my jurisdiction implementing a tax break for seniors that will affect reverse mortgages? Or have they got some grant money from HUD for first-time home buyers, which could get these renters out of renting into being tax-paying homeowners? So it starts at the local level and goes all the way up to the executive office. You've got to keep your ear to the ground to hear what's coming.
So, Keith, what's next for you professionally? You already mentioned you don't want to be part of the Forbes magazine, so we know that's off the list. What else? What else is off the list?
So, what's coming up for me professionally? I'm doing my best to work with more corporate clientele. And that's not necessarily asset managers. That's me recession-proofing my business. Because if interest rates swing up and down, or if we're in a conflict in whatever country, corporations still need to move assets. And that could be REO. That could be relocation companies. That could be family courts dealing with probate and dealing with divorces and properties that need to be liquidated. So I love helping people. I love dealing with mom and pop. But sometimes you need to recession-proof your business to ensure that no matter what happens with politics or the economy or the world in general, my phone is going to continue to ring. So there's a constant pivot point to see what's next. How can I be of service? How can I use the skill set that I already have to help the next client?
What is your number one pet peeve? I'm just curious, for real estate market.
My number one pet peeve is the lack of professionalism.
Mm.
Because I can't get to the finish line on my own. We don't have to hold hands and sing kumbaya.
Mm-hmm.
But we all have to do our job. And that could be an agent on the other side of the transaction. That could be a title company. That could be a lender. That could be an appraiser. That could be an inspector. Most of us work in a commission-based business. And we need each other. Yes, I have fiduciary responsibility to my client. But we need to get everyone to the finish line, so we can alleviate the pain points on all sides of the transaction.
What projects are you most excited about? Do you have anything coming up? Maybe you're buying a museum or a gallery or a mall.
I do have a couple of exciting projects. I'm working with a couple of developers right now that are acquiring parcels to do a large-scale redevelopment in a portion of the city. So it's not an immediate win. It might be 10 years down the line. But we can take an area of the city that's been neglected and depressed, and we can breathe fresh life and energy into it.
Hmm.
So 20 years from now, when you drive down this street in the Dallas area, I want you to go, oh, my God, I remember when this was just X, Y, and Z. Now this is the coolest place. And look at those views. Because
mm-hmm.
it's right along the Trinity River. But yes, for me, that's exciting to terraform, mm-hmm. change the environment. And one day I want to drive my children by that and say, Daddy built that, mm-hmm. or Daddy helped build that.
Oh, that's nice. It's nice to have money.
So we have to talk about leverage. Because everyone doesn't have money. But sometimes, and most times, we'll leverage other people's money. Mm-hmm. As long as it's a win-win. So people often use money as an excuse. Well, I would love to start investing, but I don't have this, or I only have that. That's fine. Find like-minded people. Yeah. There's syndication. There's strength in numbers. There's an old proverb that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together.
Mm-hmm.
So even if the theoretical person that we talked about early only has $30,000, and $30,000 is a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
if he or she can find 4 or 5 other people that only have $30,000, they can make a significant investment.
Absolutely.
And they can leverage that.
Absolutely. Keith, it's been a pleasure talking to you and meeting you. By the way, thank you so much for joining our podcast. You have inspired me. I feel like I want to go and like flip a house or do drywall now.
Let's go. Well, I don't know about the drywall.
I actually enjoy doing that. Sorry to interrupt you. I once bought a crane that lifts up a piece of drywall up to the ceiling to flip it myself.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
I will. Hire me.
Ekaterina, thank you.
Now you know a person too.
It's a pleasure meeting you again. If you want to hang drywall, I got plenty of work for you. I'm not going to do it. I'll supervise.
Perfect. We'll stay in touch.
I'll bring you lunch. How about that?
Thank you. Thank you, Keith, so much for visiting our show. And thank you for being a part of Velocity this year, too.
Thank you for having me back on Mortgage Point. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. And thank you so much for listening to the latest episode of MP Access. Until next time, stay tuned.
Thanks for listening to MP Access. Stay up to date with daily mortgage news, featured stories, and our latest episodes of the podcast at themortgagepoint.com. Don't miss out. We'll see you next week.